Hello, everyone, and welcome to Books Undone. I'm your host, Livia J. Elliott, and today we have a very special and unique guest takeover. It turns out that in a couple weeks, May 6th to be precise, I will be running a Kickstarter campaign for my literary fairy tale fantasy novella, Dance With Me. This is a very special and personal work themed around emotional and physical abuse, defining self-worth, toxic positivism, and depression. It also includes a number of literary elements, such as strike-through text that work pretty well in the text, but were not that easy to translate into a narrated audiobook. Working with an audiobook narrator that could translate these literary elements while leveraging a variety of accents to give life to a very diverse crew was incredible. So I decided to invite her to my podcast to deep dive into the process of narrating an audiobook. With all that said, let me introduce you to audiobook narrator Alison Phoenix. Alison, thank you so much for coming to my podcast and all the work that you did on Dance With Me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alison Phoenix. I'm an audiobook narrator. I mostly narrate romance audiobooks for an American company, and I was very excited to dip my toe into narrating Dance With Me, which is a fantasy novel, so something very different to what I've done before.
And I honestly love the outcome, so I'm pretty happy about it.
I'm glad.
I'm going to get ahead of me. And before we get started, I want to tackle the usual disclaimers. First, this episode will focus on Alison's experience as an audiobook narrator and in the process of narrating Dance With Me. Be aware that other narrators may have a different process and thus everything may work differently with them. Second, since we will focus on the narration side, we will try to keep the spoilers about Dance With Me to a bare minimum. If you are keen to learning more about the book, and if you are listening during May, find Dance With Me on Kickstarter.com. To get us started, what drew you to audiobook narration and how did you dip your feet into this field?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I was looking to transition my career because I had a bit of a health problem and it was COVID and things were all up in the air. And I'd always really enjoyed, well, when I was a child, I just read all the time. I had like an overall sort of outfit with giant pockets on it. And I had like four different books in my pockets all the time. And depending on what I would do, I would just read different books. I just love reading. And then I kind of like fell out of it as I grew up and, you know, you're busy with work and raising kids and stuff. But when I would read to my son at night, I would put on all these voices and my husband started encouraging me during COVID to get into audiobook narration and try it out because he could see how much I loved reading to the kids. And so, yeah, I put a few auditions out there and this American company liked my audition and signed me up for a couple of series of books and the rest was history, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm pretty happy that you did, honestly. And I guess that if you were reading to your son as well, like putting on the character, it also made it more special to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was reading Harry Potter and I was trying to do all the different voices based on my knowledge of the movie, like impersonating the actors for all the characters. I don't know. I think it was more fun for me than for him though.
That's awesome. But I honestly think that it really came through, like the characters. It was amazing, at least for me, to see those characters that were so important coming to life. It wasn't just a narration, you know, like I can feel that you were putting through a lot to make them work.
Thank you. I did have a lot of fun with it, doing all the different accents, the different characters, because they were so different. Because I'm used, like my other books were like, you know, British, Scottish, generalist sort of accents, but this was like, you know, French, American, British, which was so much fun.
Speaking of which, how do you typically prepare to get started on an audiobook narration? Because I remember that when I contacted you for Dance With Me, you first read it a bit before to see whether it fit your style or if you could make it work. So what will be the process for you since you get the query until you decide whether to work with that author?
Yeah, I definitely like to have a read first. So I think I went onto the Living book on the app, Choose Your Own Adventure Story for Dance With Me. And then as I was reading it, I just started reading it out loud in the voices that I thought the character should have. So I was pretty sold after, you know, just a short while. For my other books, I like to read the first book and then, you know, see what I would do, see what ideas come to me. For some of my books, like there's like 7 or so books in some of the series that I've been doing. So after the first few, I know all the characters. So I kind of like a little bit of a surprise. And sometimes I just, once it's like, the 5th book, I know what I'm sort of doing with the characters. So I just go in there and do it.
I'm guessing that in series, you also have to take into account like, character growth, if they age or things like that, depending on the time span. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly what's happened with these romance books that I was doing. It's over like several generations. So yeah, the characters do age and they go from like perhaps being children's voices to being adult voices and elderly voices.
How do you handle the transition? At least you must have kept some consistency, so that the child sounds somewhat like the adult version of the same character.
Yeah, I definitely... If it's been a while between the books, then I have to go and definitely go and re-listen to the book or sections of the book because I've got like little snippets of the characters if it's been a long time since recording. And then audiobook narration is acting in sort of a way. Like I will hold my body differently. And like if I'm speaking like a man, like doing a man's voice, I change the way I'm sitting and my head like goes into my neck a bit so that it can be deeper because I'm not very good at deeper voices. Yeah, I just try and maintain the accent and then, make it a little bit higher for a child or a bit deeper for an older person. It seems to have worked so far.
I would really like to listen to that. Must be difficult. The other thing that I wanted to ask you is that how do you try to get the right tone? Like, you have to handle what fits for the character, what you can do, and the author expectations as well. Like, that's a lot put on you. And I remember what I told you for Lyra in particular, which is the main character of Dance With Me. I told you the super helpful description of innocent but not obnoxious, young but not annoying. And that's not pretty descriptive. So how do you make the translation,
Your descriptions of the characters gave me a lot to go off. They were like perfect. So I felt like as soon as I read what you wrote, I knew exactly how you wanted the characters to sound, and I'm glad that it worked out. No, I thought your description was very good. You just kind of feel what the character is. And because I'd read the book as well, combine that with the description of the character and get a sense of what it should be. And then I would have like this catchphrase of Lyra that I would, if I lost her voice, I would say that catchphrase in the tone. And then it would just put me straight back into her voice.
That's super cool. A nice trick. Did you have that with all the characters?
Yes, a little bit. Yep, for sure. Because usually I just read through it and just switch between the characters. But sometimes, you just get a little bit stuck and then I'll have my catchphrase or I'll re-listen to a section of the characters and then that just puts me back in.
That's pretty interesting. I didn't expect that that you will have, but it makes sense, especially if it is something very specific for that particular character.
Yeah. The recording I sent you of the demo for Lyra's accent, it was with the pronunciation of her name. That's what I would just say. I'd just say, I'm Lyra. And then it would put me back into it.
Yeah, when she basically says her name for the first time.
Yeah. I felt that sort of, encapsulated her personality so well. But if I just said that, I would be like Lyra again.
And that's another thing that you did amazingly. Lyra has a lot of problems stuttering at the start of a book, but you also handled that in a way that it felt natural. She was really stuttering, and again, it came across as how I envisioned it. How did you handle that between so that it wouldn't sound like broken?
Well, I just read it in her voice. And I tried to stick because you had the stuttering like spelled out. So I just I don't know how to give a better answer than I just read it in her voice.
Yeah. And it shapes from the text, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the text is pretty clear with the stuttering. So like when I read it in my head, that's what it sounded like. And when I said it.
Since we are talking about the specific characters, was there any especially emotionally demanding scene?
Yeah, the ones where Lyra is going through like painful experiences. Like I had to re-record one of them, and like that sort of soft painfulness can be challenging to convey that as well, because she's not necessarily speaking, but it's in first person. So it's her speaking all the time, but not out loud. And I needed to differentiate between the voice of her in her head versus her speaking out loud without losing the essence of Lyra. So when I actually speak her words, it's a much softer sort of unsure voice. And then when I'm narrating her inside voice, it's still like the softer British, but there's a little bit more emotion at times, depending on what's happening to her. When you're reading with like a third person narration, it's kind of like a normal narrator voice because you're like neutral. And then the character voices are all having the different emotions. Whereas this one was like emotions up and down throughout the entire thing. But it was a really fun challenge.
But I think that's also the point with Dance With Me in particular is first person present tense. So the story is happening to Lyra.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I think even as a reader, generally a story that is on third person past tense, even if it is close up to a narrator, it feels a bit more impersonal.
Yeah.
I think that you were, that's what you mentioned when the with the different style of the narration.
That's exactly what I meant, yeah.
And how do you handle in those cases a third person? What will you do since basically you won't have the inner voice?
Yeah, so the narrator voice is like just sort of steady, and then the characters I'll bring in with different accents. The authors I've worked with so far all want different character voices, so that's been very fun for me.
Yet the more I glance at the box's key, the more I understand how impossible it is to spin it on my own. Downcast, I clasp my hands and close my eyes, my hopes reawakening as an idea blossoms within me. I could sing and dance to my own song, private and gentle, never too loud not to upset others. Straightening, I swirl courteously and bashful, seeking my melody. The lyrics are elusive, and so I chase them, realizing I haven't spoken since my prior failed experiment upon arrival. My attempt is clumsy, embarrassingly so, the words avoiding me before any can form. I know and understand, but translating my feelings into a language is more difficult than a grand jeté.
When switching between characters, especially in dialogue-heavy scenes, what techniques do you use to try to differentiate them?
Yeah, that's another good question. It started off with the romance books that I was doing. The author's only like instruction was that it should be like a British sort of sound. But I was getting like, you know, sick of just doing British accents. So I was like, oh, let's, you know, throw a Scottish person in here and this accent. So I just started switching between for different characters, and that kind of became sort of my pattern. But it's something I've always been able to do. Like I used to impersonate like David Attenborough and things like that when I was a child and do performances with my family. And I started learning languages. I started learning Japanese when I was like 14 and French about the same time. So, which just sort of really tied in well with this book by chance. And so it's just something that I was very lucky to be able to pick up quite quickly throughout my life, as I've just had a knack, I guess, for learning languages, and accents go hand in hand with that.
And it worked. Also, Dance With Me, it's not the book that has the longest dialogues, but there are some dialogue-heavy scenes. And what techniques in general do you use to differentiate characters without losing clarity? And that also goes to, you know, one person angry or happy, they sound like themselves, but there is a nuance to their voice. So how do you handle that?
I think it was really handy in this book that there were such distinct characters, and you gave me some great descriptions of them, and it really came across reading the book as well. But and that was also a lot of fun, being able to, like, some of the characters are, you know, French, also male accents, which I'm not the best at having that male deeper voice, so having the different accents and the different backgrounds of the characters made it a lot easier to switch between them.
We also have in this book a case of two brothers, Andre and Gerard. You managed to make them sound like siblings without giving them the exact same voice. Did you try first with one and then you alter that one, or how did you handle so that they will actually look like siblings?
Yeah, so I started with Andre, and he was much more upbeat, so I put the male French accent on, deepened my voice a little bit, and had a bit of fun with him putting like a more lively ending on his like words and sentences. And then I kept that exact same accent, I think, for Gerard, but I slowed down his pacing and made him enunciate his words a little bit more, because I think your description was he sounded more academic than his brother. And then, yeah, just by slowing it down a little bit and not having that lively tick at the end, like Andre has that exuberance.
Yeah, like Gerard, in the narration, like he really felt like coming across as mulling on his words. And that's how I imagined him as well, like excellent person, super intelligent, not the best coming across. And I really liked how you nailed that, you know, like he was taking his time to make sure that he came across correctly.
Thank you. Well, your description of him was perfect. So that's where the narration came from. Your description just, yeah, it was fantastic.
Thank you. So let's listen a bit of Andre, shall we?
I'm Lyra, I offer, touching my chest before gesturing towards him. Yours is Monsieur?
André, others call me Warlock, but don't let them scare you.
He chuckles, beaming with amusement, before clearing his throat.
I believe you need my help, my brave dame.
His eyes of obsidian twinkle with delight.
We also have the sisters. We have twin sisters, and the book does this fun thing of describing them as rightmost and leftmost because they are twin sisters. And you did some punning on that as well so that it will come across. So can you tell me a bit more of the whole process around that?
Yeah, sure. So we were already doing a little bit of panning when there were like, when there's like strike through text. And when I got to the sisters and was like, rightmost, leftmost, I'm like, why don't we pan their voices too? And it was only a little bit because they're not, you know, on complete different sides of the room. They're like stuck together, if I can say that. So it was only like slightly, but I thought that made it more dynamic, yeah, and went with their descriptions.
Yeah, and it also made it feel more like Lyra was perceiving it.
Yeah.
Because it's a first-person narration, yeah.
Exactly. So it's as it happened to her.
And the other one, I really need to ask about her, but we have Margot, which is a soprano singer. And
yes.
She gets super excited, and I had this idea of singing some of the words when she gets super excited. And I remember that I told you again, like, a very vague description of, can you sing when she gets? And yeah, I know it was a weird request. I'm not sure whether you did that before, but yeah, can you walk me a bit more through the process of how did you decide that? How did you think it was just the right amount of singing or, yeah.
Sure. I have not done anything like that before. And I was a bit nervous when I sent you the demo with her voice as to what you would think and whether it was too much. So I was really relieved and glad that you liked it. But when you described her voice, it reminded me of a character from the Beauty and the Beast musical. Do you know the feather duster, how she speaks? It reminded me of that. So as I was reading Margot's, that was like my inspiration for her voice. And then I just did the singing because I love singing. So it just worked out.
It worked out perfectly. So, yeah, let's listen out to another bit of her.
Who roams there? The soprano inquires, dubious. Metal clatters, and beads clang together like a tool rolling over a table. Come, please. Her voice chirps, trebling before whispering softly and embarrassed. I'm bored. And need another hand to hold the gears. Je vous en prie. The question takes me aback, and I look at the box, while wondering whatever gears she's speaking of. The clock echoes closer.
It's my favorite character, and I really like, to me, her and Behati are like the two sides of being motherly. One is the more excited, the other the more realistic. And I also think that you nailed that on their voices as well.
Yeah, they are.
Like every character, it was very different, but I was super impressed as you, how unique you make them be. Like everybody had their own, you know, quality to them. And I think that's what made them feel alive, yeah. Before we dive deep into the literary elements, did you encounter any other creative challenges when translating text to audio? Not necessarily on this work, but in any other work that you may have had. At the end of the day, they are different mediums.
I mean, one of the challenges, I guess, is that sometimes it's not clear from the start, like what the background of the characters is. And sometimes you really have to read between the lines to find out what they are. Some of my characters, like in other books, they were, you know, from France or whatever, but the author still wanted like, you know, British accents. So I just have to, you know, stick with that. But sometimes they'll be from like an obscure place or not where you thought they were from and you don't know till you get to the end of the book. So it's really important to like make sure, because I did that once. I gave a character a Scottish accent and then I got to like the second last page and someone just made an offhand comment to the character, oh, thank God you're not from Scotland because then we could never be friends. And I was like, oh no, what have I done? What have I done? I was just like, I'm sick of doing British accents. This character can be Scottish. And yeah, so that's my funny anecdote. But
I listened to a lot of audiobooks and it happened to me with another series, not from you, but the character kept having this Irish accent. And he kept complaining about working in the University of Sydney and being from Australia. And I was just like, that doesn't fit.
No, maybe they were just in too deep to change.
That's not probably. But yeah, I think that's also a point that you have to take into account, like the things that an author may have built, like all the world building they may have done around a character that may not be on the pages.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes. And so I do like to ask the author what they want so that, you know, the vision is in line with, you know, what you wanted. So I was so relieved. Like, it was really helpful to me that you had like a clear vision for what the characters should sound like. Otherwise, I was just going to, you know, make up my own stuff.
At least in this case, they roughly had accents from the war. But what would happen in, suppose that you have an alien race, a fantasy race, something like that? Will you draw inspiration from the war?
Yeah. I also like listen to examples of different accents if I think it needs to be like a certain accent that I'm not good at. So I will, you know, try and pick something else up to give that character the accent it should have. I think doing, you know, completely off the books accents would be amazing. If you've ever watched the show The Expanse, they have this like this race of humans that live like belters. They live in space. And I love the sort of amalgamation accent that those actors do because they're not, you know, from Earth. So they don't have an Earth accent. They all have this belter accent. I would love to do something like that. That would be really cool.
In that series, it's also more than just the accent. It's how they pronounce or the cadence, the tone. So it's...
Yes, exactly.
I think that sometimes we may speak on in terms of accent, but there is so much more around it.
Yeah, they have a totally different way of speaking, which I think is fantastic.
It really says so much of the characters, even with just the tone.
Yeah. Yeah, because even saying the same things, but with all the different characters, it takes on such a different meaning. You know, having Lyra say something versus Andre or Margot.
Yeah, and I'm also imagining that the cues that you have in the book, they are not the same for every character. Like if one character whispers, it's not going to be read the same as if, for example, Lyra whispers.
Yeah.
You know, like they may have different interpretations.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to have a little bit of understanding of like the psyche of the character as well. Like Lyra's, her whole speaking is so like more timid than the other characters, more unsure of herself, although it changes as she grows. So yeah, she whispers in a completely different way. Like Andre speaking softly, he's still exuberant, just a little bit toned down for whispers, but whereas Lyra's so different.
I really love that. And I think it came across. It's also what gives that life to the characters, you know, that it's not just being read. It's as you mentioned before, like you are really acting through as the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could feel, you know, such passion behind the writing, which I really enjoyed reading the book. So yeah, I felt like I had to do your vision justice.
I really appreciate that. Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity. That's a fantastic book. So thank you.
Thank you. When I reached the end, like on the few final pages, I was really expecting to see how that will wrap up. It felt very personal, you know, and I really appreciate that. I mean, as I said, like all the effort, it really came through. It felt more than just reading it.
I'm going to be a bit sad when it's finished, to be honest, because I really liked giving voice to these characters. It was a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of sadness in there, but it was fun to do.
That's something that I was really worried when I started searching for a narrator. Like I had what we haven't touched yet, which are the literary elements and the strike through text. I had plenty of accents. I had Margot that I wanted her to sing, basically. And I really needed to find someone that actually will be able to tackle all of that. And I remember that I listened to your sample of Jane Eyre and it was just perfect. Like I said, like that's a voice that I want, that's the accent. And then I read you knew French and could do some accents. And I was just like, yes, she's the one.
Thank you. It was just such a chance that your book is in English, but then they have like the French and then the Japanese elements. I'm like, I speak all of these. It was such a coincidence.
Yeah. I had to do quite a bit of research because I'm bilingual, but I don't speak French. So I did have to go through and I'm not a dancer and this whole book is about dancing. So it was another bit that I had to find. Yeah, something that I wanted to talk more about that we mentioned before here and there are like the strike through text. When I was writing it, when I originally wrote the interactive version, you know, when I write the interactive stories, I feel that I have a bit more leeway to do stuff that I wouldn't do in a text. So that's what I came out with the strike through text as a way of representing the talks that Lyra has that she doesn't acknowledge having, especially as she's been emotionally abused throughout the entire book. She may unconsciously realize what's happening, but then deny it because the truth is too hard. So I was quite worried about how that may come through, because it's easy to read it, but you can't actually show the strike through in audio. Like we mentioned before, it's a different medium and you had to do some translation around it. So what were your thoughts around it when I came out with the proposal as well? And how did you manage to record them as well? Because another challenge that you had was that the narration had to flow through with and without the strike through text.
Yeah. And I did a couple of different styles. Your suggestion was about panning the whispers, so it would come through just one, you know, side of the speaker, which I think worked really well. I think the first take that I did was, it was sounded more like psychosis, I think. Yeah, like a creepy whisper. Whereas when I did it the second time, so I would say the sentence, but I would pause on either side of the strike through text for like half a second and then keep going as if nothing had happened. And then when I was editing, I would separate it, pan it, and decrease the volume a little bit. But that's the way that it worked.
That is how you made it to actually continue the sentence, and then you added the strike through.
Exactly. So it's that pause on either side. So yeah, it's just pausing mid-sentence all the time, every time there was a strike through.
Yeah. And did you read all the strike through in a page, or after the sentence you would read the bit that you missed? It must have been quite an editing odyssey, I can imagine.
What I did was I highlighted all the strike throughs on the manuscript in like a yellow highlighter so that I would remember to pause. I just read it all at once, and it wasn't until I got to the editing that I cut them out.
It was pretty interesting. And we also punted a bit more randomly. It's not always one on one or only on one side. So there was also some decision in there around how you place them.
Yeah. I mean, human brains don't do things very randomly, so I hope it's quite random, just according to my brain anyway. But then there were some like longer strike throughs. And so I thought it'd be interesting to break them up, because sometimes it might be like, you know, two short sentences or three. So then I would have them going, you know, left, right, left. Because it's like, it's sort of like, you know, the different voices of Lyra inside herself, you know, the voices of doubt sometimes talking to her, you know, the shoulder angel, the shoulder devil telling you different things. And so I sort of thought that was the idea of, you know, panning them within the same sentence, because she's got all these voices telling her different, like her own, you know, self voices telling her things.
I particularly liked it because you did a very hard pan. You can hear it very on the right side or far in the left side. And it also felt somewhat detached, which is what I was going for with the strike through, because I wanted her to be her thought, but not the thought she accepted. When I quote unquote felt the distance while listening, it gave me the same feeling. And I was like, yes, successful translation in there.
Yeah. Well, you were pretty clear. Like, I thought your idea was fantastic when you suggested to pan them. Made it easier for me. So.
My world swirls in tandem with my thoughts, all scattered like the starlight falling from me. He hurt me. He damaged me. He's angry. Distressed. My fractures offended him. It was my fault. I'm worthless. I'm broken. Why am I here? Clumsy and half-blinded, I trudge and bounce against the music box's open lid. The mirror oscillates, ululating loudly.
Another element that we had, and this one doesn't happen a lot in the book, but there were also some bold pieces of text and all caps as well, in a few places only, but that was probably a completely different challenge for you.
Yeah, for me, that was about putting more emphasis on those words and sometimes a bit more like passion or whatever the emotion was, whether it's, you know, sadness or anger or disappointment, just really emphasizing that emotion on that word and saying it a little bit louder than the other sentence.
I'm guessing that is also a problem. Like, how much do you shout, or how loud is too loud? At the end of the day, audiobooks, I think most people listen to them with headphones, so you can't really be shouting, you know, even though the character is ascribed shouting. So how do you handle that?
It's just like, you know, like a slight volume increase. It's not, you know, as if I'm actually screaming. Like sometimes there was like text was like the normal text, and then it was italics, which I then just emphasize that word without increasing volume. And then after it, there'd be like the bold or the caps. And that's when I just amp up the emotion and just slight volume increase.
So you keep the same emotion in that case.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think anyone listening to an audiobook wants to be, yeah, hear any screaming, even if the dialogue is, you know, yelling or something.
Yeah, that figures. Yeah. Before we close off, what advice will you give to aspiring audiobook narrators, especially those working with diverse voices and literary effects?
I think my advice would be to keep trying, to try new things and practice. That really goes a long way if you keep practicing and keep picking yourself up.
And on the other side, for authors that, like me, may have written something that is a bit unconventional, what information will you expect them to give you, and how do you expect them to approach you with that, with the idea in general?
Well, I found it really helpful that you had a clear idea of what you wanted your vision to look like. And I really, you know, respected that it was a close story and very personal, which is why I wanted to do it justice. And I really loved the story. So it was so handy for me that you had like wrote me a little blurb on each character about this is what I've envisioned them sounding like, because then I was able to get it how you wanted. And that was so easy. Yeah. So I think having that, you know, description from you was just so helpful. You had the ideas about the panning as well. And then I sort of ran with that when I came across the sisters. I was like, well, why don't we do the panning with these as well? So that made it so easy. Whereas I feel like if you hadn't given me that description, like I would have gone and done my own thing and it good, but it wouldn't have been what you wanted. And then you would have listened to it and probably been a little bit disappointed. The fact that you were clear with me and made it so much easier.
Communication is essential, you know, keeping in touch. And also like something that I was always worried about, it's like, yeah, I may have a vision, but I'm not sure whether you can actually pull it off. Like, you know, I may have imagined a voice that was too deep for you or too high or something like that, you know? At the end, you ended up nailing all of them, so it wasn't really a concern.
Well, thank you. I do struggle a little bit more with the male voices. Like Dorian, when I did hear him, I knew it wasn't deep enough. And so when you said, oh, can you make him a bit deeper? I was like, I tried it again and I was like, this is the voice, which wasn't what I'd sent you at all. So I was glad that you liked it in the end.
When I listened to him afterwards, like, I think it's also not only on the tone, it's how he came across, you know. I could feel that he was understanding, calmed, patient with Lyra. And I think that's what truly mattered for the character.
Yeah, I totally changed him from that sample that I sent you, because I was just like, okay, let's do it deeper. And then when I tried to do it deeper, that's the voice that happened, and I was like, I think this is him.
And it was him. And on that note, Alison, thank you so much for working on Dance With Me. I'm incredibly excited about the audiobook, and after the chat I'm even more pumped. So thank you so much for doing the audiobook and for coming to the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the opportunity to dance with me. I really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to share where you are, so after people listen to this spectacular audiobook, they can find you?
Sure. I'm on Aussie Narrator. You can find me by searching Alison Phoenix. And I also have a website, which is alisonphoenixnarration.wordpress.com.
Perfect. And you will have all those links on the description. That said, if Dance With Me stirs your interest, head to Kickstarter.com and search for Dance With Me, the novelization. The campaign is active during May 2025, and the pledges include an illustrated hardcover edition, a paperback, the audiobook, and even an interactive book with choices set in the same universe. You will also find the link to that in the episode's description. Thank you for listening, and happy reading.